Welcome, welcome, everyone. This is our Garden Party Vampire Book Club meeting. Let me get Elizabeth on here really quick. This month's read was Fledgling by Octavia Butler. Hello.
Hello.
Just a quick few notes. We read Fledgling by Octavia Butler this month on Garden Party Vampires. This book was published in 2005. This was actually Butler's final book. In all of her career, she passed away of a stroke, actually, at the age of 58. Gone too soon. Quite an amazing person. Just a little bit of a history. She was raised by her widowed mother. Her father passed away at 7. And so I feel like those elements of loss and grief in her book, like she has a very intimate, I think, exposure with that, you know, through her life. She was extremely shy as a child. She is said that she was like over 6 feet tall, so very tall as a woman too. So I think thinking about how her appearance affected people's opinions of her, and also, you know, being an African-American woman in a white male dominated field, that of sci-fi fiction in the 70s and 80s. She's just amazing. She began writing sci-fi as a teenager. Basically, the turning point for her was in 1954. She watched a movie called Devil Girl from Mars. And that was her like aha moment where she was like, I can write better than this. Why am I not writing? And so, you know, she started doing that. Her first income was $15 when she won a short story contest at her community college. Considered her breakout book was Parable of the Sower, which was published in 1993. And it kind of solidified her fame, although she'd been writing for decades before that. She has won multiple awards, Hugo, Nebula, the MacArthur Fellowship Genius Grant, which is what she was the first sci-fi author to ever be awarded that grant. Let's see, anything else? It's kind of interesting that she struggled so much too in her early career, because now her books are considered like the basis of science fiction. And are actually taught in colleges and universities across the United States here. So, and one thing, just as a writer, I loved this little tidbit, is that she got up at 2 a.m. every morning before work to write, and she had all kinds of jobs. She was a telemarketer, potato chip inspector was on a list once, custodian. Yeah, so she always knew that she wanted to do writing. She knew she could do it, and she spent like a good, I think, 10 years just submitting stories and experiencing rejection until she finally kind of made it. But yeah, very shy person. Didn't actually, her publicist, she didn't really like having photographs taken of her. There are not a lot of photos of her, is one thing I read. Because she was so tall, she also had a very deep voice. One article I read talked about how she was mistaken for a man sometimes, and that kind of affected her. And so yeah, I think all of that, knowing that, and now that I've read Fledgling, I'm really seeing elements of her, which we as writers always do. We always put elements of ourselves in our characters and in our books. But especially knowing all of that, you know, I really felt a lot. I saw a lot of threads between her and the main character, Shori. With that, I'm going to toss it over to you, Elizabeth. I've been taking up all the talking time. How did you enjoy Fledgling? What'd you think? Give me your thoughts and opinions.
I thought it was great. It was so different from a lot of other fantasy. Actually, I can't believe I've never read Octavia Butler before. I'll reading some others. Yeah. There was so much that was so different from normal, like, vampire lore. And so I'm all for that. I love when, like, it's not the old standby. And it was cool that the book actually like made fun of that, like making fun of the stereotype of vampires are tall, pale, you know, white men. Absolutely. I thought it was great. And I thought Shori was a really cool character. I love that her blackness was a huge benefit throughout the whole book and gave her a leg up on the other vampires, the other pale skinned vampires. So that was really cool. I could keep going, but
I also enjoyed that. I enjoyed that the idea of her family participating in kind of a genetic experimentation long before human scientists ever even knew what that was. This is part of Butler's world building. The is it Ina or Ina? How did you pronounce that?
It's pronouncing it Ina, Me but too. I'm not sure if that's right.
I pronounced it Ina. And I listened to it a little bit and read it a little bit. This was my first title, actually, that I also borrowed a digital title from my local library, which was a very seamless experience for those of you who often go over your book budget, but you still need to read books. Borrowing from your local library is awesome. So I borrowed this title and I also listened to it on Audible. And I did like how the Ina aspect of them doing genetic experimentation and then being like melanin helped these vampire-esque people daywalk or be more awake and like combining a little bit of humanity with this. And they, and she describes them as a different species. The Ina are not a different race of humans. She describes them as a different species of creature, animal. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And yeah, the aspect of the book that was the saving grace of these people with which had a very rich the way she researched people and made this community and this culture in this book was so unique and so interesting and very believable. I never doubted it and never felt cheesy. I also think her sparse prose contributed to the realism. She didn't overindulge in description. And that's one of the things that Butler is also known for, is her sparse prose. You know, this was a steamy novel with a lot of polyamory, but I would never say I read an X-rated scene. You know right. what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's a good read. I don't feel like, but you know, and tell me how you felt like the first time when Shory and Wright kind of have a moment and you're kind of realizing like she's described Shory as a child. And then there's this intimate moment and it's the idea that like, you know, Shory's a different species. You know, she's actually 53. You know, but the humans in her life perceive her to be this elf-like, wafer-thin, appear to look 10 years old. And, like, as a reader, I was like, where are you going with this?
Yeah, that made me feel uncomfortable. I had to get over that. I actually me put too. The book away for, like, a couple of days and had to think about other instances that where, like, that made sense. Like you said, like, with elves. Elves are mm-hmm. always childlike looking. Mm-hmm. So I had to, like... But yeah, it totally grossed me out at first. I was like, why? Like, why did you describe her as a hairless?
Mm-hmm. Flat chested.
Yeah, that grossed me out. But I got over it, thankfully, and read the rest of the book.
And I felt uncomfortable too. And I think one thing that Butler, again, as I was researching her, one thing that she does is she pushes the envelope in her sci-fi. And she also wants you to question the idea of what is consent and what is... you know, what is it to be loved? What is it to give love? And I think all of, like I was reading a summary of Kindred, one of her first books, which is about time travel. I think what, you know, again, she is very good at putting a mirror in front of us and things that we can, you know, perceive and ask us, you know, what are the foundations of that perception? What does that actually mean? And how are you, you know, I don't know. It was really hard, but also by the end, I didn't feel the same way that I did at the beginning when I first read about her and Wright's relationship. Like by the end, I was rooting for her and Wright. And I was like, I'm sorry, Wright, you do have to share her in a polyamorous relationship. But you know what I mean? Like my whole perception of Shory and Wright's relationship, which at the beginning I was like, I don't know if I can read this. What have I done recommending this book? This book though was published by one of the big six publishers, you know, in 2005. So clearly I need to keep moving. And I'm so glad I did. It's an amazing book, but it did you feel that way too? Like at the beginning, your perception and idea of Shory and like what was appropriate for her. Cause again, we're starting the book not knowing and as much as she doesn't know, cause she has amnesia. But by the end, I felt really connected to all of her relationships and I wanted her relationships to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for like probably over half the book, I wondered, why did you make the choice to describe so extensively how she looks like she's 10? Mm-hmm. Like, I still am not 100% on board with that. Mm-hmm. It still is kind of like, well, why did you?
Yeah.
Like, you can say she's childlike and move on, but like you spent a lot of time to describe her as looking like a kid. And so I'm still not 100% okay with it. But by the end, I was like, okay, she really is a 53-year-old, different, mm-hmm. like different species.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, 53-year-old, if anyone ever listens to this, she's not actually 10.
She is 53. Yeah. She doesn't know who she is. And then there's also, because she also talked about, too, at the end where she hadn't really met any other of the Ina females. And then she made that a point. And there was that moment, too, where she was like, I saw these adult Ina females that were waif-like, thin, flat-chested. So I'm like, okay, she's literally a shorter version of the adult full-grown. And that also gave me a little more, okay. But yeah, I thought that was a very bold choice on Butler's, for Butler to do. But I also, again, when I was researching about Octavia Butler and the fact that she was really tall and often mistaken for something that she wasn't, that thread of otherness she injected into Shory, who was often mistaken for something that she was way not. Like, she looks diminutive, but she's actually got the, like, she's the strongest vampire of, you know, the females are the strongest. The Ina are a matriarchal society, first of all. Yeah, I think it's very interesting how she presents it originally, and then she eventually morphs it into this, oh, all of my assumptions were incorrect. And that's, I think, great sci-fi inverts the norm. And this one did it in a way that I'm like, but it was a really interesting book. That's why I was like, throw a glass of water on your face. This book's crazy.
Yeah. I thought she did that in also the way that the Ina and humans have kind of a codependent relationship. And generally, mm-hmm. when I read about a codependent relationship, I'm like, y'all get out of this. Like, this mm-hmm. is not good for you. Like, you need to, you mm-hmm. know, but, the way that it's presented is more like human beings in our world, mm-hmm. they take from other species mm-hmm. all the time. From the earth, everything. And we don't give anything back, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, very little. And then in their society, it was the Ina take things from humans, but also give things back, and, like, vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so, like, maybe codependence isn't always bad.
Mm-hmm. And I also, going back to the idea of consent, you know, there's that moment where even though Shory doesn't have memory, she knows at a certain point if Wright continues to be with her, he will lose his choice to leave, because basically the sci-fi aspect of the vampire venom is that humans become addicted to it and they can't live without it. And it's interesting, you know, we start with, this is a little girl, she can't have consent, to, oh, people are becoming addicted to her. Like, the humans are actually the people that are the most vulnerable when it comes to, do I have autonomy? Do I have choice? And it's interesting, too, when she compares the Silks and how they treat their symbionts versus the Gordons, and how it's like the Gordons, like, they even talk like, you need to settle the strife. You need to, like, be good to your household. And there is this very much, it's a symbiotic relationship. More, because I feel like codependence in a psychological way talks about, you know, abuse. Like, if you have a codependent relationship, that's not good. But this, to me, feels more like symbiote, like a symbiote. And actually, that's what they call their humans, their pet humans, symbiotes. So, yeah, that was really interesting to me, too. And at first, I was like, I would never be okay with that. And then I was like, 200 years? You never get sick. And then also, the humans have relationships with each other. And so it kind of redefines this idea of society and family and a family unit, which I really also enjoyed. And I thought was interesting, considering that Octavia Butler was a single child raised by her widowed mother, you know, didn't have a lot of family, you know, just again, drawing those threads like, oh, I wonder if this was, because this was also her last book, that idea of family and belonging, and remembering who you are.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe living 200 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought all that was really interesting because, yeah, when I was first reading, well, I guess like when things with Shory and Wright start to get a little more serious, and then Shory meets, oh gosh, what's her symbiont, her second one's name, the older woman?
Theodora.
Yeah, and Theodora, I started thinking like, man, this is some messed up stuff, you know, and I really like thought like bad codependent relationship at first, and then it was interesting as it went on how it was more, you know, about we're both benefiting from this relationship. So that was interesting. And also
comparing Theodora, Theodora is the only symbiote to die where we can actually get a glimpse of what it would have been like for Shory if she had remembered the first attacks on all of her family and all that loss and what that actually does to you as an Ina. So that also, you know, was a great plot device by Butler to give us a glimpse of what is really missing from Shory's life. Like her first 53 years really were stolen from her. And to, you know, talk about how she lost all of the stuff and she can't even remember her family to mourn. Like that to me, and it's so clever to even write that way, to invoke that tragedy and that sadness without weighing us down as the reader. Describing it, you know, you just have to have empathy, you know. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really good too. Any final words on Fledgling for us?
Well, also just the whole idea of species purity and the fear of the Ina mixing with the humans. I mean, because Shory was part Ina and part human. Mm-hmm. And she was also Black. She was the only Black Ina. And, you know, people were scared. People were not okay with it. And I mean, that's obviously, you know, a huge thing that, you know, we still see in our society today. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, you know, during obviously World War II and, you know, at other times in history. So that was, the way that was like woven into the story was really cool.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, too, how they even talked about how they didn't really have racism as we would define it, because the Ina were basically all white, like that's that species. And so that human genetic mixing that brought the melanin that allowed them to stay outside more during the day. You know, I felt a lot of racial parallels to today, what we see. And I also... the silks in general, I was just like, they fit a lot of stereotypical boxes for me. I was like, well, she did a good job of creating a well-rounded enemy, and also kind of that court scene too, and the injustices around just truth and what is truth, just really expertly written towards the end there. And that to me was the most compelling part, was the court scene at the end, or the council meeting.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Great stuff. If you haven't checked out Octavia Butler, she's got many more books. If you're on the Garden Party Vampires Discord server, I put some links today to some websites as well as some other books of hers, kind of describing what she's done. She has a great career, considered one of the founders of Afrofuturism. She's considered the godmother of Afrofuturism and also one of the founders of just modern science fiction. Octavia Butler. Can't say enough amazing things about her.
And if you're having to choose between Fledgling or A Bite Before Christmas, I would suggest Fledgling.
Easy. It's an easy choice. Sorry, Teddy. Sorry, Teddy, with your Dinty Moore beef stew. Oh, man. So next month, our read is from Blood and Ash by Jennifer Armentrout. This is a direct pick from Bookstagram. I've seen the picture of this cover all over Bookstagram. I finally was like, you know what? I'm going to read something that all the cool kids are reading. She's a more contemporary author. I think the steam level is a little more explicit than Butler, but maybe on par with Jeanine Frost. Yeah, that's about what I've got. But yeah, I found that out about Jennifer Armentrout on Goodreads. She has a whole series. This is book one of the series. But apparently they're very addictive. So I'm excited to get that started. And yeah, that's about it. Thanks so much, Elizabeth. This has been a great discussion with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Tina.
All right, Garden Party Vampires. I'm going to let you enjoy the rest of Sunday. And we will see you on March 22nd to discuss From Blood and Ash by Jennifer Armentrout. Woohoo!
Bye. See you next month.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know how to stop this. So let's see.
Me either. I'm just going to go away.